This is Heroin Addiction, presented by That Time I Got Reincarnated in the Same World as an Anime Podcaster, where we cover romance and drama manhwa, and where Yuri bait won't help you catch a bigger fish. I'm Isekai Sensei-sama, aka Brad, and as always I'm joined by Bento Baggins, aka Ben.
Addressing one of my major concerns with these comics right off the gate.
Be sure to find us on social media, which you can find the links for on our website, animepodcasterreincarnation.com. We recently opened our Discord, so you can come chat with us. We've also got some Patreon updates, one of which I'll be telling you about at the end when we're picking the next series. But we will be putting up the high-quality stereo version of all the episodes going forward as soon as they're ready. So join our Patreon, and you can listen immediately. So today we're covering Mother's Contract Marriage. As always, I will read the summary here and then we'll get into it. Lyrica is a hard-working 8-year-old girl who has always used her vivid imagination to escape the harsh realities of living in the slums with her neglectful mother. After her mother has a premonition of a disastrous future, she snaps to her senses and devises a plan to provide a different life for Lyrica. But even Lyrica couldn't have imagined that the plan was to marry the Emperor. Now that she has everything she could ever dream of, can Lyrica face reality in spite of her wild imagination?
I just say this is like hands down the worst title we've ever worked with. Like, the Mother's Contract Marriage does not accurately describe anything that's happening in this book and is like actively off-putting. And I know I said book and it's a comic.
I don't entirely disagree. Mother's Contract Marriage is, it tells you what the setup is and that's about it.
Yeah, I was so nervous when I heard that title. Like, to the point where I never would have picked this up just based on the title alone. And it's probably one of my favorites.
The thing is the normal story that you would expect from a title like that is like, you know, oh, the girl's being abused and like, you know, there's all this subterfuge going on, like a much darker thing. And it's not that this series doesn't have any darkness, but like it's, yeah.
To me, and maybe it's just like I don't fully understand. Is there like a cultural concept of what a contract marriage is? Because to me, when I heard the term contract marriage, I was like not thinking equal partnership carefully negotiated by both parties. Like,
we haven't actually read any other ones with contract marriages in it.
No, this is new to me.
Okay, let me. Well, Fantasy of a Stepmother, that's sort of a contract marriage. But that's like over when the story starts. So maybe not really the same thing. Yeah. Yeah, we don't really have any. So contract marriage is, it's a thing that comes up in lots of different series. And normally the way that they frame it is the female lead is going into this situation and going, okay, I have to do a thing, right? In order to do a thing, I need to be close to this man, whether that's taking care of his kids or, you know, saving the future male lead or the future heroine or whatever. Well, that would be his kids, but there's always some kind of thing that they're like, the best way to deal with this is to get fake married. And it's not really fake married, but contract married. And so they'll write up a contract and they get married and it's like, contract is for a year or 3 years or whatever. And it's like, when that's over, you're going to give me money and I'm going to disappear. And because we don't actually love each other and we're not going to fall in love. And then obviously that is what happens. And then the male lead has to be like, oh, I need to show her that I actually like her. I don't want this contract marriage. I want a real marriage. Blah. That's what's going on here.
That's the way they treat it, is like, this is totally normal and like everybody would know it. Yeah. And I'm just like, the idea that you could contract to be married for a particular number of years does not jive with like my concept of marriage in these traditional European medieval settings.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's a permanent thing. There have been wars fought over that. You don't just like separate. But I don't know. Is that a thing in Korea? I guess I don't know.
I don't know, honestly. I mean, as much as I see it in all these different series, it must be, it's either a thing or it just became a thing in Otome Isekai. Like,
okay. I guess I'm inviting a comment then. I'm sure there are people out there that know better than I.
Hey, jump on our Discord. Let us know.
Yeah. I would love to know more about this because it's just an interesting concept to me because it wound up like, I guess if I had known what a contract marriage was, I wouldn't have been so off put by the title. Because I'm thinking the mother is in trouble here.
Well, I mean, sort of.
But, like, I'm thinking she's being sold.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And that's not quite what's happening.
And that's not how the contract marriages work in any of the other series. Like, it's never a bad thing. It's always used as a framing device of, like, we don't love each other, right? And it's like, well, what if we did?
Yeah, this is just for appearances, but like, I don't know, though. They start off on a pretty pretty hot foot.
Well, again, this one is pretty different from the other ones, because in the other ones I've read, there's usually some kind of build up, and a lot of times the male lead will have like hints of like, oh, maybe I like this girl. And then she's like, hey, let's have a contract marriage to deal with this problem. And he's like, well, if we have a contract marriage, she'll be by my side. So I'll go with this for now and I'll deal with it then. Whereas this one's starkly different in that, like, we sort of rush past the fact that there's a contract marriage. Obviously, that's the premise of, like, how are they getting into the palace? But we're just sort of going, oh, that happened. And then, yeah, there is a thing where a lot of the time in the contract marriage series, they are like, they sort of stay apart from each other until they like, the male lead finally is like, I actually love you. And she's like, oh, I actually love you too. And then they get together where in this case, they're going at it immediately.
He is just busting out them cheeks every night. That is like the first week straight. I mean, it is like, I love that that's a joke throughout the series.
Yeah.
Is that she's just like constantly like drained from,
well,
all
he
the
is a
busting.
Dragon, so
yeah, but what does that mean? I don't even want to go there. Like,
oh, I guess never,
stamina.
You've never seen Bad Dragon?
I don't know what that means.
You don't know what that is. Oh, God. Okay.
When a person invites me to see their bad dragon, I politely decline.
Well, that's the correct response. Hey, guys, I'm not going to tell Ben what that is. So if you want to tell him, you can jump in the Discord and you can share
dear.
That.
Oh, dear. I do like the one joke in the middle of the series where they tell the, so I guess we should get to the kid. This is basically like the Otome Isekai spy family.
Well, okay. So there's an important thing to note here. Cause we've been talking about the mom and contract marriage, with the emperor and all that. But like the series does something really, really interesting that I really, really enjoy, which is it is almost entirely from the perspective of the child.
Yes.
Who is an actual child.
Yep, she's not reincarnated.
Right.
It's not like any of that. It's just from the point of view of a like the most innocent bystander who has ever existed in an
adult. But she's not. She's not the most innocent though. Like she's got street smarts and stuff.
She has like a sixth sense. I don't know if she's got street smarts because she is like, she's so just like sweet and sees the best in everybody until she's like psychically triggered almost. She has like a spider sense more than like street smarts.
Yeah, that's fair. But like, yes, in terms of adult things, she is entirely innocent. And so you get these very comedic situations where all of the adults around her are like, yes, this is what's going. Oh, we can't talk to a child about this. And she's like, what's going on? I don't get it.
Yeah. So the joke I was thinking of was where the guy, the mom is like tired out from like an all night meeting with the emperor and the kid asks about it. She's like, should I have a talk with him about this? And she's like, no. She's like, what kind of meeting was it? She's like, it was a very one-sided meeting. I can tell you that. And then the emperor is like, comes in and he's like, oh, the meeting. Yeah, no, it was a great meeting. What did your mom say about the meeting? She's like, she said it was a really one-sided meeting. He's like, okay. You know what? Fine. I will find this clitoris and I will make it a much better meeting. And he runs off to like reschedule the meeting.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think it's clitoris, but
it's such a good way to like have some raciness in a story that is centered around a child without like going over any lines or anything, which is, it's so great because so many series cross the line when there's like children around and the female and male leads are like, oh yeah, we're gonna do it. It's like,
it serves two purposes. I mean, it's funny, but also like you don't get a lot of time with the mom because it's all about the kid trying to navigate the world where like she was in a slum. Her mom was a drunk and her mom was just spending all the money that this kid managed to bring in. And the kid's trying to be responsible, trying to protect the mom, entertaining fantasies that the dad's going to come back one day and make everything better. And then one day, and like you're buckling up for this, like, oh, this is going to be one of those stories. It's going to be a Cinderella thing where I got to watch her get abused for like 6 months. And then
the first chapter definitely frames it as sort of like a drama tragedy kind of thing.
Yeah. And then in a split second, the mom wakes up and she's like, oh my God, you're alive. I love you so much. And that's when you realize like, oh my God, she's the Otome Isekai protagonist.
Yeah.
And she came back from some terrible future and now she's going to do all the stuff and the kid gets to go along for the ride. And it's like, from the kid's perspective, she just gets her wish. Like her mom's better now and loves her and does all this stuff. And it's like the sort of story that could only exist in the Otome Isekai genre, because in any other genre, you would be incredibly suspicious of all of this.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. The summary says that the mother has a premonition, and as an Otome Isekai reader, you're like, what? No, she came back in time.
Yep.
That wasn't a premonition. That's not how this works. But the series is from the perspective of Lyrica, the little girl who didn't go back in time. And so from her perspective, that would be a premonition. Now, I don't think the mom actually like talked to her about the fact that she knows the future yet, at least.
No, so you just get to watch her know it. You just get to watch her do all the things they do in every Otome Isekai manga, where she invests in the right business and she knows that there's like a tragedy that's going to happen that's going to affect fashion somehow because all the women in their giant stupid dresses couldn't get out of the fire in time. So she's designed a dress that's like more mobile and everybody's going to start wearing that and she's going to make more money. And, you know, she's just like, she's just hitting all the beats of the Otome Isekai in the background.
Yeah.
While the kid's just like, my mom invested in something. Well, this is obviously a scam. My mom's an idiot. And the kid is the perfect combination of like, super sweet, super innocent, and very protective, and like always trying to do the right thing. So you can't not root for her. It reminded me so much of Spy Family in the beats, except like Anya's a little asshole.
Yeah.
And this kid's like very pure. And I like both of those tropes, but
it is very interesting because like, and we'll probably get into this later in the rubric when we talk about recommendation strength, but like there's, if you were coming into this never reading any Otome Isekai, there's obviously a good story here, an interesting premise, and like all this stuff going on that you would enjoy it. But as an Otome Isekai reader, there's like an extra level to it where you get these little hints of things going on. You go, oh, I know what's going on here. I see you. I see what you're doing.
No, if I were to put together the Otome Isekai curriculum for the college course I will one day teach on the subgenre, I would definitely make this like your fifth reading. Because
yeah.
It benefits a lot from knowing the tropes. This is like, I'll be honest with you, isekai is a tired genre for me. I am so sick of it. Not the Otome Isekai stuff revitalized it for me a bit because it's a different take on it. But it's easy to get burnt out because it's kind of the same thing every time with little tweaks. But this one like actually does something new with it.
I have to take a little aside here, and this is probably a conversation that Kermit should be around for, but I always hear people saying, and by people I mean you two and also some other people saying, oh, there's just too much isekai. It's all the same thing. It's everywhere, blah, blah, blah. You say it's a tired genre. And I think, how many have you watched? How many have you read? Like,
if it helps, I also consider the Shonen Battler a tired genre.
I mean, the same question there. Because, like, when I look at the landscape, you know, there's certainly a lot of isekai that are very samey. There's a lot of Shonen Battlers that are very samey. They follow the same story beats. That in a lot of cases, there's some that are, like, literally the exact same thing. It's just the character names are slightly different. And so I won't argue that it's not oversaturated, but when I look through everything that I read, everything that I watch, I go, there's so many different ways that this is presented. And I almost feel like the fatigue that you're feeling from that is just from the fact that there's so much of it, not from the fact that it's all the same.
Well, it's not exactly the same, but I'd compare it to, I guess, music genres, where eventually there's like every 5 years or so there's like a breakout new style of music that becomes very popular, and then a lot of other artists come up inspired by that style and they mimic it, and we eventually get a saturation of samey sounding kind of music, but there's always the standouts that the songs are just good. And I would say, like, I don't know, like Greta Van Fleet, for anybody who knows what that is basically just Led Zeppelin. But it's been so much time since Led Zeppelin was popular that they can kind of get away with that. But there was a while there where like every band just started to sound like Led Zeppelin. Mm. There's a while there where like every band starts to sound like Metallica. Every band starts to sound like, there's a bunch of people trying to do what Taylor Swift does. There's a bunch of people trying to do what the Backstreet Boys did. How many boy bands were there?
I think you're spot on here that there's a lot of it. And so it can be very difficult to
find the diamonds
in the rough.
It's hard to get excited about a new one.
Yeah.
I guess is kind of where I'm coming from. Like if you told me in the mid 90s, like, oh, there's a new boy band coming out and you know, pretend I wasn't ashamed that I listened to boy bands, but they're like, oh, it's like 98 Degrees is coming out. It's like, well, yeah, this is Backstreet Boys, but not as good.
Mm.
And that's what a lot of like isekai is. It's what a lot of Shonen Battler is. It's
like, oh, no, and I get that. So what I want to impart on you is that, like, that's why I'm here. I'm going to go through all of it, and I'm going to be like, here, check this one out. So I just want to, like, temper the whole, like, oh, it's all the same thing.
I'm not saying because it's an isekai, it's bad. But this is, like, when you encounter one of the ones that's... I think it's easy to get lazy.
Yeah.
As a creator in the genre.
Mm-hmm.
Because people like it so much that if you do just do the same thing, if you do just hit the same beats as everything before you, you'll probably get some success.
Yeah.
And
I'll read it.
So I love it when people go the extra mile, and yeah, this one goes the extra mile.
This one goes many, many extra miles. This is honestly, so I think I started reading this when there was like 5-6 chapters, something like that. Cause I had seen the title. It had come up on Bato as like, here's a new one, check this out kind of thing. And I could see it was, you know, close to the top in terms of like the rankings and whatever. And I was like, Mother's Contract Marriage. Eh, I don't know. I read all these contract marriage ones and it's fine, but who knows? And then I think it was on the Otome Isekai Discord. Somebody posted an image or something from it. And I looked at that and I went, all right, I should probably check this out.
Oh, and yeah. This artist could adapt Dilbert and it would be fucking amazing. That's the other thing.
So, it's an important point to hit. The story is obviously really, really good. And like the characterizations, the story beats, the premise, all of that is great. And then they're just like, oh, by the way, this is the most beautiful thing you've ever seen.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, this is skipping ahead a little bit, but I think I actually wrote intending nothing to ever hit this. Yeah, for art competency, I said every frame is a painting.
Yeah.
I intending nothing to ever hit that. And spoilers, this is going to hit that for me.
That's what I said last time. I was like, keep an eye on this.
It's literally, I think every frame is a painting. I do think they digitally painted almost everything.
Yeah, I have a feeling that there was some kind of like 3D modeling stuff involved, but then it looks like they literally painted over it.
Yeah, there's parts where I can see tracing. And this is one where it's like, that can be cheap. Like, we've talked about this a little bit with like the AI stuff and everything. It's like, you can do that in a way that, again, is lazy. And you might get away with it because it's going to look okay. But this one, they took all that stuff and they used it the way I think people would ideally use it, where it's just a tool.
Yeah.
And they paint over it. They bring something new out of it.
I have a feeling that this is a case where, like, so I see there's an author and an artist, which makes sense because I think it would be difficult to do both of those. But, like, these two people got together and said, let's make the best thing we possibly can. And I think they're executing on it. Every single chapter is just like it's moving the story along. It's visually interesting, even though like the art style stays the same, the way they frame things and the way that things flow and all of these different pieces come together. It just like every single chapter is something new and exciting. I think you said this before we started recording, but like, yeah, there's no point at which there's like a lull and you sort of get bored and you're like, oh, they're doing the same thing. It's like, no, every single chapter comes and is like, yes, new and exciting.
And I think it's an interesting conversation between the creator and its audience, because this isn't a book, or I keep saying book because I'm wired that way. This isn't a comic you can read just by itself. I think you could, and you could enjoy it, but to really get the most out of it, you have to know a bunch of otome isekai tropes. Like, it probably would have even helped me to know more about contract marriage. And you have to have read a lot of isekai. I think that's who this is for, because the pacing is such that, like, if I were judging this in isolation, I would be like, wow, the pacing's really, really quick. But if you're somebody who is familiar with all these beats, like, they know you already know all this stuff. They know you've read these isekais before and you know what's going to happen, and you don't want to be bothered with the tease. Because, like, a lot of, like, the tension in a lot of situations comes from, like, how is the heroine going to get through this? And I'm thinking, like, so she eventually meets a character who's going to become sort of her older brother. And he is not receptive to these strangers in his household at first. And, you know, there, I've read a lot of otome isekai where there's, like, the initial rejection followed by slowly warming up. And it's like
20 chapters of,
yeah, so we're just going to do that again. Yeah. And it's like, but no, he does something rude. He stands her up for a tea party, and her maid is, like, furious, and you love that. So that gives vent to some of the audience anger. That's the author, yeah, like, winking at you, like, I know. And then very quickly it all turns around, like, they, without feeling forced. That's the beauty of it.
And I really love that one because it sort of used Lyrica's superpower, which is being the most endearing little girl ever, because, like, they go, like, oh, she's so sweet and innocent. She didn't understand that he stood her up, and she's acting, you know, she's going and going, oh, you were so busy, so I decided to come and give you these cookies, or I forget exactly what happened, but, like, they frame it as, oh, she's so sweet and innocent. But you get that sort of background thing where it's like, no, she knows. She knows that he stood her up. But she's, like, putting that out of her mind and going, that doesn't matter.
Like, she won't let herself believe that sort of stuff because she can't.
Right, right.
Like, if she, that's how she has dealt with her life up until this point. Like, if she actually accepted the reality of her situation, it would just destroy her. So instead, she just comes up with a better alternative where everybody around her isn't terrible. And then,
but by doing that, she's turning people to her side.
When people see that, like, that's what she assumed, their guilt takes over and they have to make it real.
Now, so I wanted to say, I definitely think there's a lot of extra here for readers of the genre. Like, you definitely see things probably quicker, you understand things, but I don't think it's necessary. I think that just someone who's into, you know, fun, I don't even know what to call this, because it's sort of drama, but it's also not, and then it's sort of, there's, like, romance in the background, but it's definitely not a romance. It's really hard to pin down the exact thing here, but, like,
A lot of people, lighthearted slice of life comedy.
Yeah, maybe. A lot of people can get something out of this and can, like, see it as, like, oh, this is a really good series. It's just the otome isekai community is going to get way more out of it because of that.
Yeah, you could definitely read it and enjoy it.
Yeah,
but like I said, if I were to put together a reading list, this would be further down the reading list, but not because it's not as good.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause if you can give people that bonus, you want to.
Yeah. You'll get so much more out of it. Yeah.
For example, like, did the fact that you didn't understand the contract marriage stuff, did that detract anything?
No, I eventually figured it out. I don't know if I had never read Notome Isekai, would I have known? Yeah, you know, honestly, I probably would have.
Not to mention that the contract marriage stuff was a subversion of the normal Otome Isekai contract marriage stuff. So there's even that. I sort of there should be a different title, but all of the alternate titles that I'm seeing are all contract marriage. My mom entered a contract marriage. My mother gets married again. My mother got married by contract. Like,
I think my problem in this case is with the real title and not the translation. Yeah. I guess that sets up the situation, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't like the title, but I don't know if I can think of a better one.
Yeah, it's difficult. I understand why they went with that. It's sort of interesting though, as good as all of it is, that the title is not quite as good as everything else.
And that's why I wonder, like, if I had known what a contract marriage was, I might not have been as off put by the title. When I thought of contract marriage, I thought of arranged marriage. Mm-hmm. And I thought the mother had less agency in the contract than she obviously does. I mean, she's basically the boss.
As you're coming from this from a perspective of not knowing about the trope of contract marriages, that makes total sense. I can definitely see how that assumption gets made. Coming from it, from reading all these, I had a completely different initial thought process of like what's going to be going on. So we both got blindsided by that.
Yeah. But there's not... I like how quick everybody is to embrace the kid. And this is one you have to read.
Right.
We could give a detailed summary, but like you do have to read this one.
Yeah, I don't want to give a whole lot away, because part of the fun is sort of exploring all these things going on through the eyes of an 8-year-old. And I can tell you, as a father who had an 8-year-old quite recently, they're weird. Like, 8-year-olds are weird. And so like the characterization of Lyrica in here is honestly spot on, because that's about the age where they start really having their own agency and start like figuring things out for themselves and not just going with the flow and everything. But also they're still completely a child. So all of their thought processes are childlike. And so it's this really strange mix of like acting grown up, but also as a child. And this mixing of those two different, you know, thought processes that you get. And they did a really good job. Now, I will admit, my son is very strange. He's not a normal child. but I have spent enough time around normal children to say that, like, yes, this is also... They hit it. They really did a great job with that. I really like how you get these pieces of these broader political situations going on, and, you know, the thing that's going on with the emperor and the nephew who is like the heir, and how there's like political factions and people trying to like, there's assassination plots and like all the stuff going on. And Lyrica is in the center of this whirlwind of things going on. But given that no one is explicitly talking to her about them, she just has to like osmosis information from the things she can see and hear. And as an 8-year-old, completely misses out on a lot of what is going on.
Yeah, I do. My favorite character is almost always the maid. And Brynn. That's still kind of true in this one. Yep. I like the fairy tale nature of it all, that the mm-hmm. different royal families are all inspired by the like creatures of their sigil, like the the ravens or the the servants who are also kind of tricky. There's all the administrators are snakes.
Yeah.
And all the guards are wolves. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Literally wolf, the name.
Yeah. I do want to talk briefly about the what I guess is going to be the next obstacle, which is the noble families are trying to take the control of the empire away from the imperial family. And one of the people they're propping up to do this is this kid who is supposed... Yeah, Fjord. He's supposed to be the most beautiful thing that has ever existed. And I don't use the word repulsive very often, but like that character is one of the most horrifying, alien-looking, uncanny valley creatures I have ever seen.
Okay.
So is that supposed to be attractive?
I think... Knowing what I know about like Korean culture and stuff, I think I understand what they're going for.
I mean, I've seen a K-pop star that looks like they're trying to look like that.
Yeah.
I don't like it there either.
I'm on your side. I think he looks weird and like, but Lyrica is constantly like, oh my gosh, he's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. And it's like, okay, I'll just...
He looks like a haunted doll.
I
don't know what you're talking about.
Like, if you saw him actually moving, you'd be like, oh, shit.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my God.
I didn't think you were alive.
Everybody has K-pop lips. That's the one thing I will say.
Yes, I did want to touch on this. The art, it's so beautiful. Every frame is a painting, all of that stuff. And like I'm reading it and I'm not someone who's into art, but I'm reading this going, holy crap, this is so good looking, right? I can tell, I notice it. It does affect my, my rating of this. However, there's one thing that I don't like, and that's the lips.
Oh my God.
They
so
do
weird.
This thing where they like, I wanna say like they make it hyper real, but it's not even that. It's like beyond hyper real because they put the detail of like the little what are
they? They look like they have
cuts.
Chapped lips. Yeah.
Yeah, but they do it like with so much detail. Yeah, they look chapped and like dry. Not all the time. Sometimes they look normal, and especially when it's not like a close up shot. But in almost every close up shot, they like draw the little lines on the lips and they make it look really weird. And I'm just like, it stands out so much.
There are parts where it works. And this is where like, I don't know anything about Korean standards of beauty other than what I have osmosis through K-pop and Otome Isekai, which is probably a terrible way to represent a culture. But I know the pale skin is something they like. Mm-hmm. I know pale skin, red lips. I know that's hot.
Which must be why they say Fjord is so good looking.
Yeah, I know like to an extent that's like, I don't know, the point of lipstick is to make your mouth look more full and flush. But like it works on some people. Like it works on the Emperor until they draw his lips all chapped up, which is gross. But like... On the female characters, I think I'm used to seeing it. I'm used to seeing all the makeup and everything. On the male characters, it's different, but it works on most of them until you get to Fjord. Because like the Emperor himself, he has a darker complexion.
Yeah.
And I think the contrast looks good. And the older brother, his eyes kind of pop. Like he's... Yeah, it complements his color palette. And it's the same with sort of everybody else. But then you get to that Fjord guy, man, and it's just like his pumpkin eyes and his super pale skin, his super pale hair, and his little, like, little Dutch boy shorts. I don't know what those are. It's just like, oh, it's just like the Oh, I hate that design.
So I kept reading comments that people were like, oh, he's the male lead in the future. And I'm just like, oh, really?
Can we get him long pants? Can we just get him long pants? That would help so much.
But also, like, I have a hard time thinking about male lead at all, considering she's 8. So they have to do a time skip. But, like, they've shown that she's sort of already infatuated with him. And I wouldn't call it quite, like, romantic love, but she looks at him and goes, oh my god, he's so beautiful, and
yeah, I think I want it's more him to just
be my teacher, and you know,
I think she just it's more a I think she looks at him the way she would look at a beautiful flower or a puppy or a horse. I mean, I think Jules. It's just beauty for beauty's sake. I don't think there's any romance in it.
I that's what I got from it. But then when you read people say, oh, he's the male lead, it's like...
Never read those comments. They're... I don't take their shipping seriously. I'm sorry if you're one of them.
I will agree you should not take any comments at face value. There have been plenty of times where I've read comments and people are like, oh, yeah, this gets really, really bad in this horrible stuff, and it's the worst, and it's so awful. And then you like get to the end and you're like, what? I mean, sure, it was dramatic and everything, but like the way you were describing it, I was prepared to be in a depression from reading it.
y'all know you get gossipy in those comments. It's half the fun. I will say that. I'm not judging them for it, because it is fun to be like really hyperbolic about this.
Yeah.
And I enjoy reading the comments, but I would never, like, oh, he's the male lead. I don't think this is ever going to that. I don't think she's... Because we see in the mother's nightmare version of the future, if I interpreted correctly, we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, she dies in the future that the mother's trying to avoid as an adult.
Yeah.
And so the story, I guess, goes until she's in adulthood, because she's contracted for 8 years. So Lyrica will be 16 when the contract marriage is over.
And by adult, we mean 16, because that's good enough.
Yeah, well, royalty back in the day. I never know what the rules are for these comics, if they're using like modern standards or whatever. But she'll be old enough to... not have this childlike innocence about her. She'll have to have learned a little bit about the world by then.
Right.
And at 16, you would start dating. That's when she could show romantic interest in this kid.
If a series describes, you know, two people in a romantic relationship as 16 or older, I'm generally like, okay, all right, I'll accept that. I mean, you're definitely still a child, but
like, as long as they're both 16.
Right.
Or aroundabouts.
Whenever they start to do it with like, oh, she's 12. It's like, I don't think that's okay. 14 12, is a stretch. 15
I was 12,
is.
I was still super into Pokemon. Yeah. You are not ready for anything like that.
You also didn't grow up in a medieval society where, you know, there were nobles and stuff.
Well, you're one of 17 children to have survived this long. You're
but no, 12 is 12 is right out. 14 is icky. 15 is on the line. 16 is okay.
Yeah, but so I could see an epilogue, maybe. I don't know if this story is going to cover, because like the whole thing seems to be her innocence. That's the hook.
It's honestly, there's not. How many chapters is it? 39 chapters in. And I haven't quite seen what I suspect to be the main plot line yet. There's definitely hints of like, oh, the political stuff that's going on, but it hasn't really gotten to Lyrica's level yet. And so it's like, we're following her. It's her story. So what is the actual main plot line here?
Yeah, I could see like a 4-year time skip, but any romance with her, I think, would have to be like in an epilogue. It doesn't seem to fit the main story. It's not that I wouldn't be interested in seeing what happens to her after this period, because I'd be interested in seeing, you know, I suspect the contract marriage doesn't end. I it ends and they come back together or something. Mm-hmm. But like, I would suspect this family goes on, because even the kid who's supposed to be the emperor would want this family to go on.
Right.
So yeah, I think that's great candidate for an epilogue. That's fan servicey, but it doesn't fit. It's like, what I compare it to Spy Family a lot in my head, because you don't want to see, I mean, you have all those people talking about Anya and Damien, and it's like, obviously, yeah, that's the little puppy love ship there. But like, it would be weird if the story suddenly started like hyper focusing on that as like a realistic thing. Like,
certainly not now.
Yeah.
You saw the fan comics about when they're like 15, 16, right?
Yeah.
Those are cute.
Yeah, it's fine. I get it. And I think this is a case of like, I'm an old man now. The people making those comics are probably not 35. But yeah, it's the focus of Spy Family, like the sitcom element of it, is it all kind of has to go back to zero at the end of the arc or the end of the episode. And that's why I see all these people talk about Spy Family, like, oh, when are we going to get some like stuff between Yor and Lloyd? It's like right when it's about to end.
Yeah.
Like
right.
That, I mean, because there's nothing left after that. Like,
yeah.
And that's kind of where I see this going as well. So like, I'd say enjoy the ride for another like 40 chapters, and then we'll get some, let them face a bunch of problems as kids. I get major Draco Malfoy vibes from this kid.
Given other series I've read, now obviously, again, this is doing new and different things, so I wouldn't put money on this, but given what I've seen in other series, I can see him doing a time skip, maybe 6 years, something like that, where, so they'll do a bunch of stuff as kids, and then they'll be like, yada, 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 6 years later. And then you're at a point where it's realistic for two teenagers to fall in love at that, you know, 14 years old, 15 years old kind of level, and then do something with it then. I don't know what the actual plot would be through that. So
this kid, the repulsive one, is supposed to die in 3 years, which I'm right now for. But I suspect something is going to be done to save him and possibly turn him to the good side, because he's kind of like he's kind of a double agent right now.
Right.
But you suspect maybe his commitment to that isn't very strong. His family wants him to do one thing, but maybe he doesn't want that.
Well, and you have no idea, because even when you see, like, because they do, every once in a while, they'll use a perspective from someone else to give you some more information. Like, you're not following Lyrica at that point. Or you'll hear an inner dialogue of someone else. They do show you, like, Fjord's mom is like, yeah, you go in there and you make yourself important there because, you know, we need to set ourselves up and everything. And you see his face and he's just sort of like, yep. It's like very flat and like dead.
Yeah. Like a ghost puppeting his doll meat.
Yeah.
Like he's so goddamn awful.
I have a feeling what's going to happen is that I think where he's at right now is very much just like going with the flow, sort of like no emotions kind of thing going on. All of the smiles and faces that he puts on are an act. And I think what will happen is Lyrica will like give him real emotions, and that will like turn him into a real boy.
You know how in Jujutsu Kaisen, everybody's like, why does Gojo wear that head wrap? And I just keep thinking, like, if Gojo's eyes looked like that kid's eyes, head wrap makes total sense.
Yeah.
Cover them. I can fix you. Cover the eyes. We'll get you some dark, dark glasses. We'll get you some long pants.
Get rid of that hat. That hat in the last chapter? No.
Oh, yeah.
That is not okay. I know they were going for that, that French Renaissance thing, but that's like, no, that is not.
Do you know, I actually laughed out loud when, because one of the things is like he teases her a little bit when he first meets her, and she like curtsies to him or something. He curtsies back and he does this magnificent execution of a curtsy, and she's a kid. She wants him to teach her how to curtsy, and that's what she writes in her little letter, like, would you come to my house and teach me how to curtsy? And the mom is like, imagine asking a boy to teach a girl how to curtsy. And I'm like, I can imagine asking that of this boy. Was this your specimen of masculinity that was supposed to, yeah, no, I mean, I totally, that guy was quarterback written all over him. Like, yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah, definitely. Korean ballet vibes.
There's one of the things, like, for me, and this is a weird thing to talk about as like a straight dude reading romance comics, but like, I learned something about myself reading these, and it's like, I prefer large masculine men to romance me.
I mean, that's like, that's fine.
Like, and that's the one thing. Well, that's in Japanese romance comics, like shoujo especially, that classic shoujo style. Everybody looks like a fashion, not even a fashion model. They look like fashion design drawings.
Tall and slender, yeah.
Yeah, like impossibly tall and slender. Like the legs are like 8/10 of their body. And
which is gross.
Yeah, I've never really been into it. I've never seen why it was attractive. And, you know, broadly speaking, I'm not attracted to men. But, like, when I look at the Emperor, like, his chest popping, you know, it's like, I get that.
Yeah, objectively.
That's a swagger I like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you there objectively. As far as, like, my actual attraction, I'm attracted to femininity.
So yeah, I don't, like, think...
But, yeah, for my female leads, or, you know, if I was a woman in that situation, yes,
It's a complicated thing, because, like, as a dude, you're not socialized to, like, appreciate any beauty you can't have sex with. Like, women can compliment other women on their dress, and it's fine. Like, I can't be like, oh, bro, that suit looks tight on you. Like, that's weird. But, like, bro, that suit does look tight on you. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean.
Bro, that hat is totally complimenting your eyes. You are killing it.
Oh, but it wasn't complimenting his eyes, and that's the problem.
Exactly.
His eyes are the problem. You just want to gouge them out and put in something that looks a little better.
They definitely are
those, like Jordy LaForge eyes.
I think the main problem, and this might be on purpose, they look like they're looking past you.
Like, yeah.
It's almost, I can't describe them as looking dead, because they have depth to them and everything.
They look like blood.
But they look like... It looks like he's not focusing on what's in front of him. It looks like he's focusing off into the distance, as if, like, everything that's around true. Him doesn't matter. Which, again, might be what they're going for.
That's true. That is probably part of the reason I find him so, like, alien.
Yeah. But the...
He's so unfocused.
The completely white skin... with the cracked red lips is like, that's too far for me.
I mean, he has, like, I know they find pale skin beautiful in Korea, but it's like, he has the complexion and coloration of somebody with, like, albinism.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, how far do we take this, guys?
Like, it's almost like they drew him in Photoshop and then didn't color him in.
Yeah. He's just the canvas.
Is there anything else? Any of the other characters you wanna touch on? As we said, we don't want to get too much into
I'm ready to rubric if you are. I think anything I have to say will come out in that.
All right, let's do that. As normal, we'll do the rubric, and that will obviously spark another hour and a half of discussion. All right, so we got our rubric pulled up. As always, you can rubric along with us. The rubric's up on our website. You can go and find that. We are going to be going with the non-romance rubric because any romance that is going on at this point is not with the main character in the slightest, so it doesn't make sense.
No, it's just her mom getting plowed repeatedly. And I've heard that the sex is unsatisfactory sometimes. So
that would count against that way. I think it's better now.
The last I heard, he was going to try again. I don't think we've seen how the results of that. I haven't seen the minutes from that meeting.
No, there was another one just recently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and see if I can.
I don't think she got too much into if it was better this time. But she looked satisfied, if not completely disheveled.
She looked wrecked. Okay, let's go.
Some women are into that.
Some women are into that, and a whole Bato audience is into watching it.
I did join the Not Safe for Work channel on the Otome Isuka Discord.
Ah, you finally braved the deep waters.
So, yeah. Some women are into that.
God.
Okay. All right. So, content and ideas. I'll let you go first.
Honestly, I think I am going to go with a 5.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
I know you defend the isekai genre till the day you die, but I think what they're doing with this is taking all of the tropes that they know the audience knows, and they're using that audience knowledge in a way that I haven't seen used this effectively in a while.
So I will say, and I want to make this clear, this is not technically an isekai. This is isekai.
Yeah, it's a regression or whatever. Yeah. But you know what I mean. Like the Otome isekai, whatever it is we're studying here on heroin addiction.
Yeah.
They use that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm waffling on this one because my gut is telling me that this is a 4.
I wanted to go with a 4, but what pushed me over the edge was thoroughly developed in a way that has a lasting impact. It's going to have a lasting impact on me. And it could be because this is the first thing I have seen that has had this conversation in such an effective way. But it caught me in the right mood, and yeah. I'm not usually a very generous... I'm not usually a very generous grader, so I'm going to indulge myself this once.
I think I'm going to have to stick with a 4. And the main point there is that while all of these, it's very fresh, new, interesting, it's executing well on the concepts that it's going over, my primary point of detraction in this is that the actual development of the characters is very sidelined. And I think that's primarily because of the perspective that we're reading it from, through Lyrica's perspective. So the little bits and pieces you get of the other characters, inner monologues and stuff, is good, but it doesn't fully encapsulate these, like, changes that Lyrica is creating in the world around her. I would have liked to see, well, and the other part of that being that, like, a lot of the time the character growth that you see is sort of just like a 180. Bam, it happened. Just yeah. Immediately there's not really a whole lot of growth to it. Honestly, it's really on the line. If anything, I'd say this is like a 4.5, and I'm waffling between round up versus round down. And the only reason I'm rounding down is because, given everything else that I've read, this is like, it's really doing it, but it could have gone a step further. And to hit that five for me,
is near perfection, so that's fine. Four is a very respectable score.
All right. Pacing and structure.
This is a tough one for me because we don't have a lot to grade on.
Yeah. We are still very early in this series, which is interesting to say. 40 chapters sounds like a lot, but honestly, it's not. And these chapters seem really short. I was looking at the sort of like the length of them, and they're not actually short, but they focus so much on these beautiful paintings that
there's a lot of like multi-page transitions,
right? And there's not a lot of dialogue to it. So, you know, you're only spending 4 minutes to read a chapter as opposed to, you know, 8 to 10 for a more dialogue heavy series.
Yeah. I would go with a 4. There are things that are, I think the pacing in this one errs on the side of too quick.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting. Good. That's not something that happens very often. Normally the pacing is like way too drawn out.
Overall, I prefer things to be too fast than too slow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably why it's getting a 4 instead of a 3. If it had erred on the side of the slow, I'd be like, eh. So that's a little bit of my personal preference coming in there. I have faith that it's going to continue moving things along and pushing arcs and pushing characters to come to her side and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's taking it for what it is. The arcs are not the plot. Like,
right.
what it's about is not what's technically happening with the Empire, because that's the subversion of the expectation. Is the mother is the Otome Isekai protagonist, but this is happening from the perspective of somebody who's not involved in the mother's struggle so closely.
Yeah.
So her arc is sort of just charming different people. And so she has charmed the Emperor. She has charmed the staff. She has charmed the older brother. And now she will presumably charm this robot monster. And
he's a porcelain doll.
Oh, there's nothing worse than that. So yeah, I think it's a 4. I think it's coming together pretty well. I will say I don't feel like I have enough to grade this on. It could vary wildly either way by the time this is done.
I'm also going to go with a 4, although I'm more on the higher side as opposed to what you said about, you know, coming up from a 3. Almost completely because of what I talked about for content ideas, which is like I don't feel like it quite explored the surroundings enough. I like the fact that it's fairly quick. I never felt that it was too quick, although I can certainly understand how some people might feel that way. I think the structure so far has been fine, although it doesn't go up to a 5 for me because I feel like it's lacking in a sort of primary tether, that main plot to go through. Now, by chapter 80, this could be a 5 for me. It's completely possible. I would probably rather come back when it's complete and regrade it. And I hope that it's got to a 5 on that. And frankly, the content and ideas could have gone up to a 5 by the time it's over as well. So, I think there's room to grow on this. I'm looking forward to it. Well, characters, I'm going 5. I love all of these people. Now
I'm going, I'm going four for the reasons you said during your content and ideas. How did we flip on this?
So just because, well, that's part of it. The reason I want to hear more from these people is because I love them. So the primary point is like Lyrica is the best. Like she is so cute. She's so charismatic. She's so realistic that like on its own, she gets the whole thing up to a four by herself. And then you add in other people. So the mother, Lydia, right?
Luda or something.
Lydia. Well, anyway, I think what the mother is great because now obviously she was abusive and bad and that's not good. She had to go through horrible trauma to understand what was really important in life, and that's not great, but that's a normal Otome Isekai, protagonist thing. So I'm not going to really detract much from that. She came around and she's doing her best now. I think she's great. The Emperor, the characterization of that, they do a really good job of like, oh, he's scary and distant and everything. And then they go, oh no, look, he completely loves this little girl who is now his adopted daughter. And like, everybody's scared of him, but look how he acts around her. And now they're all surprised and everything. That characterization, I love that. That's like my favorite trope of like scary dad is now soft with their child. That's my favorite. So I love him. The prince Attil, that whole thing where like, he's like, I'm not going to be close to anybody. And then I'm going to stand her up and she's going to learn her place. And then like, he comes around instantly. And then the mom comes and is like, hey, Emperor, you need to talk to him. He thinks you hate him. And the Emperor's like, what? That whole thing was great. I loved that, the way these characters interact with each other. And then you put on these other supporting characters, the maid, her brother, who is the attendant of the prince, the prime minister, and then I think the prime minister's son, who is with the prince as well. Like all of these periphery characters who like speak their minds, and they're like saying like, oh, you shouldn't treat her like that. She loves you. This is, and like just the way that all of that comes together. I
think look at all this emotional intelligence.
Yeah. And like even the bad guy. So you have the mom, Fjord's mom, who is like trying to pull some political machinations. You have like the one knight who is like secretly not good and all of that stuff that was going on. Like it all feels right. All these characters feel like actual living people. So yeah, that's why I'm out of five on characters.
I tell you, I pretty much agree with everything you said, but the reason I'm at a four is things are trucking along great for me until I hit the crown prince's 180. Not so much that I don't buy his 180 with regard to Lydia. I think they did that well. I think they resolved his like, oh, my uncle's not trying to kill me. I will embrace humanity.
I get you. Yeah.
I'm nitpicking. I'm really nitpicking there.
That was really, really fast.
In general, I like him. And I'm not necessarily even unhappy that they skipped over that part. But they set it up. And they chose not to do anything with it.
Yeah.
So it's a four, but it's a strong four.
I don't think I like to what you said that they didn't do anything with it. They didn't do enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very much like, here's four panels of, hey, he likes people now. It's like, eh. You draw that out a little bit more. Come on.
It's okay. And, you know, they give him a lot of development. I think he needs a little bit more. He may get more.
Yeah.
But I am nitpicking to avoid giving it a perfect score, to be perfectly honest with you. So,
Well, that's a good point, because as now we go into art competency, I think we know where we're at. We're a five on this. We definitely already went over this a lot, but I think, as you said, the rubric description is perfect for this. Every frame is a painting. The art by itself is worth reading the comic for.
It's like if you read a Final Fantasy concept art book and they just painted word bubbles on it. I mean, I'm serious. Like, this, whoever is doing this is so talented.
This was, so if you listen to our last episode, I told Kermit he should check this out. Literally just because of the art. I don't think he would care for this story, but I think he needs to look at this just to look at these beautiful paintings.
Well, and like, I'll tell you, you know, it's not necessarily even a personal preference. I think the kid that is, I genuinely think is supposed to be the most beautiful is hideous.
Yeah.
But that does not take away from the skill that it took to render him.
Well, I mean, right. As much as we're repulsed by him, he's still like beautifully rendered.
Yeah. Hauntingly so.
Yeah. I would say. And you know, I think, you know, it's playing up a little bit how horrifying he looks, but like there's, you can definitely tell the beauty that they were going for with it and the way that they executed it. I think they're doing exactly what they want with it. We just differ in our standards of beauty.
I'm playing it up just a bit, but I genuinely am repulsed by him. He grosses me out. I'm not kidding about that. Like, I really don't like to look at him.
And obviously the thing with the lips, which we went over a lot.
Not my thing, but it's obviously a choice.
Yeah.
It's obviously executed well.
I'd like to hear from people who are into more like other kind of Korean media, you know, live TV and you know, K-dramas and stuff like that. Like, is this something that they like do in live action? Like, accentuate the lips to the point of like, so, looking otherworldly? Like, what's...
I don't like... And I was kind of touching on this. I don't like boys that look like girls, necessarily. Like, in my opinion, that's my just fetish. Not... Everybody likes a femboy. But in this case, it's... Like, BTS.
He's not, though.
No, not that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like the BTS guys. I don't find them particularly attractive. Mm. I'm not... They're not targeting me, which is totally fine. And that's not to say I don't even like BTS. Like, they got some songs that are fine. I just, like, that aesthetic, it doesn't work for me. And I feel like that's the aesthetic that's being applied to this kid.
Yeah.
And because it's not like they're trying to look femme. They're trying to appeal as men to a female audience. But it's like a high fashion appeal.
You know what it seems to me? It seems like you take like the Victorian era or maybe Elizabethan era standard of beauty. It's like they read about that and then instead of just applying that to the women, they applied it to everybody.
I don't know. If you look at like really old art from like China, Korea, Japan, they do have the painted lips, the porcelain skin. I mean, it's fine. Obviously, a ton of people are into it.
Yeah.
And that's most likely who's going to read this and most likely who this artist is targeting. The artist themselves probably prefers this. And again, it's a choice. It's not a comment on skill. And so...
And it certainly is not like a detraction to the point of like, I can't stand this. It's just like, okay, moving on.
Yeah.
So moving on to artistic flourish. I'm just going to read this here. The flourish and style are exceptional or innovative. Certain moments seem to come off the page. That would be a five.
Yep, it is. Some of those, there's a point where it transitioned from night to day, and I've talked about how I love it when they use the scrolling format of the phone comic or the web comic, and the transition from night to day is totally animated and cinematic, and that's so cool to me. I never get sick of seeing it.
There's there's something I want to sort of explain here, because I think, you know, art competency and artistic flourish can tend to sort of overlap a lot. And you might tend to think, oh, how could a 5 in art competency be anything other than a 5 in artistic flourish? But I think it would be possible. So if you had every frame as a painting, you know, you could have every frame looks really, really great. It's lovingly rendered. It's super detailed, all that kind of stuff. But if it's just the same thing over and over again, static camera angle of people talking, you know, same camera angle, you're not putting, you know, borders around and using shading and colors and stuff like that to sort of set the mood and the tone and everything. If it's just a beautiful picture every single time, your artistic flourish would be a 3 or a 2 in that case. What they're doing here is they are taking their beautiful paintings that they do for every single frame, and they are also adding in great camera angles. You get the idea of motion from it. You get these borders that set the mood. You get your shading that tells you like the setting and the tone that they're going for. When she's having one of her like premonitions, the colors shift to be sort of like almost a photo negative thing. It's like it's really blued and everything. Like they're using all of the techniques that make a really compelling, you can feel what's going on through the art.
Yeah, there's kind of, so I think a lot of people look at art and you can tell if it's good or bad. And then I think if you're a person who doesn't, you know, make art or make visual art, you might not have the language to describe what is good or bad about it. And so when we're separating art competency and artistic flourish, what I was going for here is when I'm talking about competency, I'm talking about illustration. Mm-hmm. Can you render the scene accurately? Is your perspective good? Is your anatomy good? Are there like mistakes in the art that are not intentional? Like, I'm not talking about stylistic choices. I'm not talking about distortion. I'm talking about mistakes. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about artistic flourish, we're starting to bring in more of the art that's specific to sequential art. And that is basically comicking.
Right.
And if you're interested in what influences me on that point, I would say check out, there's a book, Sequential Art by Will Eisner. And there's another book, I don't have the title off the top of my head, but Scott McCloud is the author. He writes a lot about this stuff. And you can conversely have poor illustration skills, but excellent sequential art skills. Mm. And I would say, think about like your newspaper comics.
Yeah.
Like not, and some of those people can illustrate like champs, but many of them are just doodling, but they can do it in a way that communicates their ideas effectively.
Right.
So like you can have solid sequential art skills with very simple illustrative art. It's a tough thing. We've talked about it a little bit on Heroin Addiction and the other podcasts, but when you're analyzing comics, you got to think about layout, paneling, angles, tone, color, all that stuff. And one thing we didn't I wanted to mention is when they have a flashback, sometimes they switch to old school shoujo manga style.
Yeah.
Like the artist is very fluid with like, they'll go from like coloring in modern webcomic style or Korean webcomic style to shoujo Japanese manga style with the screen tones.
Right.
Instead of colors. And
and they do the chibi stuff from time to time, and like, yep, it's where it should be used and it looks right and everything. So
yeah
so definitely they hit it out of the park with that. I feel like this would be a good story to read as a novel. Not that I particularly would, because I don't really read stuff, but the art and the artistic flourish of this really elevates it even farther.
Yeah.
So you're agreed on a 5 for that as well?
Yes, I am.
Well, now we get to the important one, right? Personal preference.
It's a 5. This is this might actually be my favorite one we've done.
I will say, I don't think this is my absolute favorite of all time, but it's probably top 3.
Yeah. Yeah, for as little of it as there is relative to the other stuff, this is probably my favorite.
Yeah. This is definitely one where I'm looking forward to it each week. When I see it pop up on the feed, I want to read it immediately. Sometimes I'll skip ones that came out a few hours earlier to read this one first. It really, like I said, I mean, I obviously love the whole, like, cold daughter becomes soft for, or cold man becomes soft for his child trope. That's my favorite trope. But, like, and this isn't like that all the time, which my most favorite ones are, but the way that they pull off all of these different tropes that they've gathered together to create this series is just like, it's just so good.
All I could say is a little bit about me. If you don't follow anything else I do, my hobbies are reading, writing, and podcasting. And I often podcast about the things I read and write. And so I read a lot. You were angry with me for not starting this earlier. But I read like multiple books per month, tons of comics, all this stuff. And often it's things I want to read, but things I'm reading on a self-imposed deadline as well. Mm-hmm. And so when I finish something, it's like, okay, good, that's done. Now I could go on to the next thing. This one, I can say, when I got to the last chapter, I was disappointed that there wasn't more. I was not relieved that I could go on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And that says a lot for me.
Well, to be fair, it's probably better that you didn't start it earlier, or you would have got behind on your other things, because you would have just stuck on this.
No, it was really good. I have it subscribed on Bato. If I don't forget to log in, I fall behind every now and then. I just recently caught up on all the Shonen Jump crap. So maybe I'll try to keep up with this one as well.
And last, not least, recommendation strength.
4.
Yeah, where's my 4 webcam? For me too. So I was going back and forth on this a little bit. I feel like this is obviously a must read for genre fans. I don't even know if strong recommendation is a strong enough wording for that. Like, if you're listening to this podcast, as soon as it's over, go read this series if you're not already. The only reason I can't give it a 5 is because I don't think this is for everybody. I think it's for a lot of people. I think it's for anybody who likes any kind of like soap opera stuff, anybody who likes, you know, pretty things at the very least. Like,
I'd say it depends. Like, I don't think I could recommend it to just everybody, because I think you got to be somewhat into the Otome Isekai stuff. So if you're not into Otome Isekai at all, this isn't going to change your mind necessarily. But also, I would say it depends on why you're reading Otome Isekai. Mm. Like, if you're reading romance comics to be like, I don't know, titillated or excited or whatever, this isn't going to do it. There's not a lot of romance here. There's sex, but it's for a joke.
But those people should still read it.
I don't know if you'd be in the mood for it. Like, if you're not in the mood for like a wholesome sort of comedy, then it might not, I might be overhyping it to you.
I wouldn't read it alongside the things you normally read, I would say to those people, but you should still read it.
I would say, if it helps at all, I'm quite cynical. Like, I like horror, and I've talked about this in therapy, actually.
Is that not what this is?
I find trauma makes something more believable to me. Mm. I am that human that they talked about in The Matrix that could not accept the paradise because it was lacking a certain amount of pain. So, like, I don't typically go for just, like, wholesome things.
I would totally accept that Matrix.
But even I was, like, I think I posted the meme from Brooklyn 99 or whatever.
Yeah.
That shows where she gets the puppy and she's like, if I've had it for a day and if anything ever happened to it, I would kill everyone in this room and then myself.
I've known
that was my exact reaction.
5 minutes now and I would...
Yep.
Yeah.
That's my reaction to this little kid is like, she even melts my cold heart. So yeah. I think if you're open to this at all, you stand a really good chance of liking it. If you're not open to it at all, I wouldn't force it on you. If what we have described sounds boring, I mean, people like, I just don't want the rebound effect of like me telling you this is the greatest thing in the world, you reading it, it's not for you, and then you hate it, then you hate, like, feel the need to like bash it.
I don't think that's gonna happen, honestly. Yeah. Like, I've seen it being recommended to other people, I've recommended it to people, I obviously recommended it to you. I have not seen one single instance of somebody even being like, eh, it was fine. No, every single person who it gets recommended to is like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I have ever put in my eyeballs.
Well, whenever we open the Anime Podcaster Reincarnation merch store, we will sell sell Protect Lyrica at All Cost t-shirts.
We need to get some Patreons before that can happen.
Speaking of our Patreon, you can subscribe.
Yeah, get the episodes early. And another special thing that we'll be telling you about in just a couple minutes. All right, so it's time to add this up and give it its rating.
I already added mine up.
Let's see here.
I think we have the same score.
I don't know. I gave the first two fours. So I ended up at 89.
89 as well.
All right. So we evened out there. We I guess that was characters, right?
Yeah.
What?
I said we were flipped on some of those categories.
Yeah. 89. Where does that land? 89.
I would say 89, if you're rating out of 5 stars, I would, that's a 4.5 rounded up to a 5 for me.
All right. I'm going to give it a 9. I'm going to give it a 9 on Bato.
Yep.
Which,
I think.
So I'm looking at the breakdown here. On Bato, it's got a 9.1. 84.4% 5 stars. 14.2% 4 stars. And, like, no one's giving it less than 4 stars.
Yeah, this is a discussion I've had. Like, at the end of the day, ratings are only as useful as they are to the people looking for something to read.
Hmm.
I don't put a lot of stock in ratings, but I would say if you're being fair about ratings, very few things are perfect and very few things are absolute garbage.
Yeah.
So I think this one is near perfect.
This might be as close to perfect as you can actually get.
Yeah.
I would have a hard time imagining something that's better than this.
We say this every time for the ongoing ones, but yeah, if I got to the end, there is a chance I would bump this up to a perfect score.
I don't know that it could hit an absolute, you know, 100.
But I could get it to a 95 and that's good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, sir. Well, I mean, it's good enough now. So
good enough for the 10 out of 10 or yeah. 5 out of 5 or whatever.
Well, and as opposed to a lot of other series that I really like that I see people give 10 out of 10s to, and I go, I think you're pushing it there. If someone gives this a 10 out of 10, I'd be like, yeah, go for it. Obviously. Like,
well, and that's the rubric thing, trying to separate, like, is this good from did I like it?
Yeah.
Did I like it? Yeah. 10 out of 10. My favorite one. Is there anything I could find about it that's wrong? Yeah, there's a couple little things. But I think some people rate for themselves. Like, some people are just curating their own collection of their favorite right. things. And that's why ratings kind of aren't that useful.
Right.
Because we yeah. don't all have the same. Not everybody is using my rubric.
But they should. You know, what people should do is they should use the rubric and then come on our Discord and share their actual rubric ratings for these series that we've covered.
You should. That would yeah. be interesting. It would actually help me design the rubric too, because the idea for the rubric is that, like, an independent scorer would come up with close to the same thing.
Mm. All right. Well, now it's time for the big reveal. So we're going to choose the next series that we're going to cover, but we got something extra special now.
Oh my God.
What we're going to do, Ben, you are going to choose 3 series from the list, and then we're going to put a poll up on Patreon for our patrons to vote on which one of those 3 that they want us to do next.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So make sure that you go out there and join our Patreon if you want to be involved in picking. What'll happen is I will put that poll up basically right now as we pick them. And that will be up for a week, since Ben always waits to read these anyway.
Yep, you got time.
So, let's see.
What am I picking from? Just the Google Doc?
Yeah. Now, I will say, probably if we get recommendations from people, like actual, like, hey, check out this series, and it isn't one that's already on the list, we'll probably just go ahead and do that one. But as long as we have no straight recommendations, there will be a Patreon poll.
Okay. I have my first choice. It is Becoming the Dark Hero's Daughter.
All right. What's your next choice?
Beatrice, because I have no idea what it is.
Ooh, good choice. That's, if we go with that one, you definitely have to get the romance rubric put together. Okay.
And then I think I will choose, where was it? A Transmigrator's Privilege.
Oh, that's a good choice.
I'm hoping it's about the social justice concept.
No, it's not. I enjoy that series. I'm actually a little bit behind on it, so I'll have to, if that's the one that gets picked, I'll have to make sure I get caught up there. I'm only behind because it didn't update for a couple weeks, and then a whole bunch dropped at once. Oh, we have to update the title. It's actually The Perks of Being an S-Class Heroine.
Oh.
It's too late. You already picked it.
All right.
But it is, there was a up to a season 1 finale. So, that's a good, I always like when there's a full season to cover, because that's a nice spot where you can be like, you know, if you're not super into it, just go to the end of the season and check that out. But all right. So Becoming the Dark Hero's Daughter, Beatrice, and The Perks of Being an S-Class Heroine. Those are our 3 options for next time. So make sure you go out there, and you will have to become a patron, but every single tier gets to vote. So go ahead and check that out. Well, thanks so much for listening. And before we go, I want to thank Sagoi Mart for partnering with us. Sagoi Mart is a retailer of Japanese snacks, drinks, toys, and merch. They have a lot of cool stuff you can't get outside of Japan. You can check the link in the description or use code APR15 at checkout to get 15% off your first order, which also helps us out. And you can let us know what you think on social media. Tell us if you have any series you want us to cover, and you can just chat us up. You can check out our website, animepodcasterreincarnation.com, where you can leave comments about these podcast episodes and also find other posts and reviews. And on the website, you can find links to all of our socials, which include Patreon, Discord, Twitter, I'm not going to call it X, YouTube, and Facebook. You can also just send an email to isekaisenseisama@gmail.com. And please don't forget to rate us on the podcast platform of your choice, or all of them. That really helps us out and gets us some visibility. And don't forget to check out the regular podcast, That Time I Got Reincarnated in the Same World as an Anime Podcaster. And if you can't get enough of Ben talking about stuff, you can check out his other podcast, Words About Books. They've recently been doing a three-part series on A Court of Thorns and Roses, which is so in line with the Otome Isekai
of literature. Yeah.
I literally said, if this was a manhwa, I'd read it. There is actually a manhwa out there, but it's only like six chapters, and they just did it as like an experiment. And I found that, and I was like, oh, why isn't this just the whole thing? I'd actually read it.
I should try to DM Sarah J. Maas and tell her she's leaving money on the table.
Well, once again, thanks for listening. We hope you had a good time. Now, you'll have to excuse me as I'm starting to come down from my manhwa high, so I gotta go top up. I have a super secret recommendation.
Oh my gosh.
I think this is one that a lot of the Otome Isekai community probably already knows about and reads, but I only picked it up recently. I'm not sure how I missed it. It's been going on for a little while, and it is like my favorite thing. It's called The One with the Villainous. So it's a manga. It's a villainous, like, it's straight up Otome Isekai. This girl gets isekai'd into the game. She becomes the villainess. And what's really great, they do this really interesting thing where the villainess is still, like, aware. So she's, like, trapped inside this, like, space where she can see what this girl is doing with her life. And she also has access to, like, all of the knowledge from this girl's life. So she can read the novel that, or the game that she's in, but she also has access to all this, like, actual facts and stuff from, like, the real world and everything. And so the girl is like, oh, she's so upset that she took over the life of this villainess, but only because she wants that villainess to be happy. And so she does everything in her power to change the fate so that this villainess can live a happy life if she ever gets to come back into her body. So, like, she befriends the crown prince that she's the fiance of, and, like, all of the characters around, you know, the side romance characters and everything, they all come to love her. And so instead of, like, going down this dark route that was the original game, she, like, builds up all these friendships and loving relationships and romance with the prince and all that stuff, all while still going in the background, I'm doing this so that when the villainess comes back to her body, she can have a good life. She's like a really good, sweet person, right? And then they get into school and the actual heroine of the game shows up, who we find out is also an isekai protagonist, right? But she's like nasty, right? And you're like, this isn't how the original game went. Like, why is she doing this? And so that the original heroine of the game is like, why are all of these people treating her so well? Like, they're supposed to fall in love with me, but they're not falling in love with me. And what we find out is she starts using like cash shop items, basically like cheat items. So there's like a perfume that has like pheromones or whatever, and all this different stuff to basically trick all of the main characters into falling in love with her.
Should have been called the one with the microtransactions.
Well, but here's the thing, because this is like four chapters that all of this takes place in at the beginning. So they finally get to like the condemnation event. Did I say that properly? The condemnation event.
Okay.
And the villainous girl, who's not the actual villainous, is like, what's going on here? Why is all of this happening? You all liked me, and I'm always doing stuff to try and make everybody happy and everything. And the prince is like, we're annulling the engagement because you were bullying this girl and everything. And it's like, but that's not. And so she breaks. She like snaps. And then the actual villainess comes back. And she's like, you guys suck. I love this girl, and she did everything for you, and you destroyed her, and so now I am going to live for her. So it's like the reverse kind of thing. The girl was living for the villainous, and now the villainous is living for the girl. It's so good. So instead of like, oh, I'm going to destroy this girl and everything, she's like, no, I'm gonna move to the countryside. I'm gonna move to my father's territory. You guys keep doing what you're doing. I'm going to go off and do this. And what she does is she goes to this territory and starts building it up. She becomes like super powerful because she's got all this knowledge of the game and like for the real world and all that. So she's like the most powerful person. She basically becomes the hero and everything. The reason I started reading this was because someone posted a page where she's killing a god. And I was like, I have to read this immediately. And I did. I read the whole thing, all of the 40 some chapters in an hour. I just blew through it. And I was like, oh no, I'm done with it now. There's no more. So the main story is what takes place after this condemnation event. The actual villainess sort of like going around and saving the world and building up her territory and like being a badass. It's really good, and I think everybody should check it out if they haven't already.
Well, there you go. Super secret recommendation.